ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, the Summum Bonum, Chapter 10, Deliverance of the Yamala Arjuna Trees, Text Number 10. Devasamnitanapyante, Devasamgyetam apyante, Krimi vid bhashma samgitam bhutadruk tatkrite swartham kim vedani rajo yatha deva samgitam apyante krimi vid bhashma samgitam Bhutadruk tatkrite swartham kim vedani rajo yataha deva samgitam apyante krimi vid bhashma samgitam Bhutadruk tatkrite swartham kim vedani rajo yataha. Please chant. Deva Samgitam. The body now known as a very exalted person, like president, minister, or even demigod, Api, even if the body is so exalted, Ante, after death, Krimi, turns into worms, vit, or into stool, bhasma sangitam, or into ashes, bhutadruk. A person who does not accept the shastric injunction and is unnecessarily envious of other living entities, tatkrite, by acting in that way, soa artan, self-interest, kim, who is there, veda, who knows, niraja atajataha, because from such sinful activities one must suffer hellish conditions. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. While living, one may be proud of one's body, thinking oneself a very big man, minister, president, or even demigod. But whatever one may be, after death, this body will turn either into worms, into stool, or into ashes. If one kills poor animals to satisfy the temporary whims of the body, one does not know that he will suffer in the next birth, in his next birth. For such sinful miscreant must go to hell and suffer the results of his actions. Purport. In this verse, the three words krimi vid bhasma are significant. After death, the body may become krimi, which means worms. For if the body is disposed of without cremation, it may be eaten by worms, or it may be eaten by animals like hawks and vultures, and then turn into stool. Those who are more civilized burn the dead body, and thus it becomes ashes, bhasma sangitam. Yet, although the body will be turned into worms, stool, or ashes, foolish person just to maintain it commit many sinful activities. This is certainly regrettable. The human form of life is actually meant for jivasya tattva jigyasa, enlightenment in knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, one must seek shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Tasman guru prapadyamte prapadyate prapadyata tasmat gurum prapadyata. One must approach a guru. Who is guru? Shabde para chanishnatam Bhagavatam 11.3.21. A guru is one who has full transcendental knowledge. Unless one approaches a spiritual master, one remains in ignorance. Acharya van Purusho Veda, Chandogya Upanishad 6.14.2. One has full knowledge about life when one is Acharya van, controlled by the Acharya. But when one is conducted by Rajoguna and Tamaguna, one does not care about anything. Instead, one acts like an ordinary foolish animal, risking his life, mritu samsara bhartmani, and therefore continuing to go through suffering after suffering. Nate vidu svartha gatim hi Vishnu, Bhagavatam 7.5.31. Such foolish person does not know how to elevate himself in this body, and instead he indulges in sinful activities and goes deeper and deeper into hellish life. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namini. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namini. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Shatavini. Vancha Kalpa Taruvyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So the bodily conception of life, regardless, brings one down basically. The result of the bodily conception of life, regardless of what the position is of the living entity in this material world, is that one comes down gradually into a hellish situation. That is the conclusion of the Sri Ishupanishad. Andan tama pravishanti je vidyan upashate. Je avidyan upashate. Andan tamaha. So, andan means gross ignorance. Tamaha means darkness. Pravishanti is one enters into. So, to enter in the dark regions of ignorance and darkness happens when one avidyan upashate. The word upashate means worship. So when one worships avidya, ignorance. So what is this ignorance according to the Sri Ishupanishad? Is forgetting real knowledge of vidya. And vidya is described in the first mantra of the Ishupanishad as the full understanding of Krishna's position and our position, and also the relationship. So Krishna's position is that he is the Ishvara, the Ishavasya. The Ishavasya principle is that he is the controller and he is the owner of everything. And what is our position? We are eternal servants of Krishna, or we are a spirit soul, the energy of Krishna, the complete energy of Krishna. And our relationship is that we're dependent on Krishna, who he provides for us. So there is a quota that Krishna provides for each one of us. So knowing this principle is vidya, understanding this. When one forgets this, then it's avidya. So exactly what are the symptoms of avidya? Avidya is that one becomes engrossed in the misconception of the self as this material body. And that's regardless of what's the title or what the designation of the body is. Maybe is a very important demigod, or a great wealthy person, or a president, or a simple worker, or even an ignorant person, an uncivilized person, or maybe an animal, or maybe an insect. Whatever it is, that designation, there is an engrossment on the identification with that particular position. So one thinks like that. And when it comes to human, when it comes to the human body, there is a very special opportunity, because the human body, it is explained, that have the capacity to fully understand the process, the principles of vidya. So, and the human body is designed for that, is meant for that. So when the human body, because they unfortunately misdirected into the culture of nations, then it's considered a very unfortunate situation. And in that unfortunate situation, one is described as basically, it becomes like a dogma. One worships the process of avidya or ignorance. In other words, in the process of ignorance, or in let's call it like this, the temple of ignorance, in which the worship of ignorance is described, the deities are this sense of I am, and this is mine, and this is mine to enjoy. And the process of worship is sense gratification. If we may make like a, how you say, a simile in this case, or a comparison, you know, like that. Yeah, so the process of sense gratification becomes the means of worship. And when one does that, when one is engaged or fully engrossed in gratifying one's senses, it is described that one enters into the darkness regions of ignorance, in basically descend into hellish conditions. This remains, Prabhupada explains, that this particular instruction or truth becomes even more heightened in these modern times. That because civilization, modern civilization, is actually devoid of any counteracting support for the culture of knowledge. Basically, it's non-existent. And the whole process is focused on just the engrossment of trying to achieve material advancement without any conception or understanding of the Ishabasha principle. The concept of God becomes simply a means to actually obtain economic development and sense gratification. It's very interesting, and Prabhupada points that out, that in Vedic times, that was the means actually to advance materially and spiritually. There was a sort of a very well-designed and balanced social structure in which dharma or religiosity was the anchor or the base of everything for obtaining both spiritual and material advancement. So you have the process of dharma, artha, kama and moksha. That's at the heart of the structure of the Vedic social system. So by religiosity you obtain economic development and sense gratification, and by religiosity you get you've been led a life that is sort of upward in consciousness, and at one point you aspire for liberation. So it was a very natural arrangement, very organically designed. In the modern world, the principle gets passed down that, yes, there is religiosity, and with religiosity, you could obtain economic development and sense gratification. However, because of the advancement of material civilization, then the materialistic man, which becomes misguided by an atheistic class of people, then it starts to figure it out. Why do we need all this religiosity? Prabhupada explains this mentality. Why do we need, they start to question, why do we need to go to church to ask God for bread? That was the whole argument of the communists to eliminate religion why do we need to go to all this prayer and all this, you know, spending time in all this thing of God, give me bread. We have a big factory and the factory makes bread. So why do you need God? We just need to actually focus on the industrial revolution. So this godless civilization, the atheistic civilization, start to replace or actually religiosity becomes an obstacle or a sort of offset. It becomes more now, the place of religion in the world is more like a supportive, a feel-good, something that allows people to have a little moral balance. That's what religiosity does. It helps us to maintain some sense of mundane morality, but for the purpose of sense gratification. And that type of culture is being led by atheistic people in the guise of teachers, leaders, leaders of society. And in the words of the Sri Upanishad, they're the worst. So if regular ignorant people, misguided people, goes to hell, or goes into the darkness of the regions of ignorance, the Upanishads say, worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. When he says the so-called knowledge is that they present themselves as the teachers, as the guides, as the leaders. And as such, they actually leading society into hell. And that's what Prahlad Maharaj says also when Prabhupada quotes his verse in the purport, Nate vidu shrata gatim hi Vishnu verse, durashyata ye bahir artha manina, andaja tandair upani yamanas, tepisha tantriam urudamni badha. That persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life, and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru similar blind man attached to external sense objects, cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home back to Godhead and engage in the service of Lord Vishnu. As a blind man guided by another blind man miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men led by another materially attached man are bound by the ropes of fruitive labor, which are made of very strong cords, and they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. So that's what this engrossment on the bodily conception of life does. One becomes covered by ignorance. And that happens immediately as we actually come into the material world. Immediately we become recognized, we become covered by the false ego, ahamkara. And that's the most subtle element of the material elements. And then when the pure living entity enters into the material world, it becomes covered by this element, ahamkara. And once start to think, this is who I am. And like that, the path downwards start. Because desire is there when we come to this material world. The combination of desire, the desire to enjoy, that which is actually like the essence of the living entity, that desire to enjoy, ananda maya viasat, it's just part of us, it's our nature. So when that nature becomes affected by ahamkara, false ego, then one immediately starts to think that sense gratification is the all and all we have to enjoy through this body. And the process, this whole thing of sense gratification is what takes us down into hellish conditions, life after life, regardless of how one's put it. And that is 99.9% of living entities in this material world. That 0.1%, the liberated souls that comes into this world. Very rare. And these such great personalities, they don't get covered by the false ego. They understand. But even then, it is explained, like in the case of Sukadev Goswami. Sukadev Goswami was in the womb of Vyasadev's wife. And he decided, because he was a liberated soul from the very conception, understanding that the power of the material energy and the material attraction, he decided, no way I'm going out there. So he decided not to come out of the womb, because he thought that if I come out of the womb, I'm going to be influenced by I'm victimized by material energy, by Maya. So Vyasadeva, after the poor wife have to endure a pregnancy for 16 years. I mean, 9 months is, you know, the poor woman's usually by the 9 months they're ready to pop, you know. It's like, imagine just holding that for 16 years. So Vyasadev started to tell the son, my dear child, please come out. And he say, no way. I don't trust you. And that was Vyasadev. He didn't trust Vyasadev because Vyasadev was still have some affection for his wife and children. And Sukadev Goswami was completely, he was Atmarama, self-satisfied. He was in that position. He didn't need anyone to achieve happiness. So he didn't trust Vyasadev because he saw that he understood that Vyasadev still have certain attachments, according to the narration. This is in the Mahabharata. And Vyasadev, he say, okay, So let me go and talk to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then if Krishna tells him, then Sukadev will believe him. So Vyasadev went to Dwarka and told Krishna the problem that he's facing and his poor wife. And then Krishna agreed to come to Vyasadev's ashram and requested the boy, please come out. Don't worry, I will always protect you. You won't be affected by Maya. And the boy came out and immediately grew into a teenager, so 16-year-old teenager, just naked like that, he just took off. And Vyasadev immediately, he was very happy when they saw, both mother and father were happy when they saw this beautiful boy, immediately transformed himself into this effulgent youth. And they didn't have time to actually, you know, smile because he just took off. He didn't even say Hare Krishna. He just took off. And Vyasadev just started to run after him, calling, my son, my son. And Sukadev just very fast just left Vyasadev behind. It is explained that the only thing that Vyasadev could hear was the echo of his voice. My son, my son, my son, my son, my son. Within the woods of the forest. So he was completely renounced. So this is one of the rare cases. However, the instruction is that even such a great personality as Sukadev Goswami, who is Atma Rama, explained, was cautious about the influence of the material energy that has on the living entity. So what to speak of anyone of us, regular, you know, Nitya Bhadas, Jivas, that we've been here, many of us, for who knows, uncounted life, going at it into this process of birth and death, trying to enjoy the resources of material energy, as Prabhupada said, trying to enjoy the resources of material energy and being entangled in its complexities. So one becomes more and more entangled in the complexities of this material energy. So there is the requirement for becoming educated. From becoming educated, to regain again the process of knowledge, transcendental knowledge. So to take up the process of vidya. That transcendental knowledge is received by a spiritual master. One have to come to the position of Acharyavan Purusho Vedat. Acharyavan, that one is controlled by the Acharya. One is guided by the Acharya. Prabhupada explains in the purport. One have to again regain the process for which humans are meant to, which is jigyasa tattva jigyasa. Nothing else should be the aim of life. That's what the Bhagavatam says. That nothing else should be the aim of life but self-realization. That's the message of the of the Sri Upanishad as a message of the scriptures for human beings. So one has to regain the proper path, and that is being given by Guru and Krishna. So Guru and Krishna put us in the right path, and that's the position of fortune. It's a little time. I was gonna also read the instructions of Rishabdev, King Rishabdev, to his sons. I'm just gonna read the verses and stop there, because some of the verses, because it's very also specific to this subject matter that is also being discussed here, or in this passage of in the 10th canto. This is in the 5th canto, chapter 5. And Rishabdev is instructing his sons, King Rishabdev. King Rishabdev is a Shaktyavesh avatar of Lord Krishna. Lord Rishabdev told his sons, "My dear boys, of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance and austerities to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified, and when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. One can attain the path of liberation from material bondage only by rendering service to highly advanced spiritual personalities. These personalities are impersonalists and devotees. Whether one wants to merge into the Lord's existence or wants to associate with the personality of Godhead, one should render service to the Mahatmas. For those who are not interested in such activities, who associate with people fond of woman and sex, the path to hell is wide open. The Mahatmas are equipoised. They do not see any difference between one living entity and another. They are very peaceful and are fully engaged in devotional service. They are devoid of anger and they work for the benefit of everyone. They do not behave in any abominable way. Such persons are known as Mahatmas. Those who are interested in receiving Krishna consciousness and increasing their love of Godhead do not like to do anything that is not related to Krishna. They are not interested in mingling with people who are busy maintaining their bodies, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. They are not attached to their homes, although they may be householders. They are not attached to wife, children, friends, or wealth. At the same time, they are not indifferent to the execution of their duties. Such people are interested in collecting only enough money to keep the body and soul together. When a person considers sense gratification," this is a famous version, Prabhupada quotes so much, the Nunam Pramate Kurute Vikarma verse. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activities. He does not know that due to his past misdeed, he has already received a body which, although temporary, is the cause of misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it is not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratifications by which he perpetually gets a material body one after another. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruitive activities. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear, and as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activities, he has to accept a material body. When the living entity is covered by the mode of ignorance, he does not understand the individual living being and the supreme living being, and his mind is subjected by fruitive activities. Therefore, until one has love for Lord Vasudev, who is none other than myself, he is certainly not delivered from having to accept a material body again and again. Anyway, he goes on. This is a famous passage that Prabhupada quotes a lot in terms of describing the reality of people engrossed in material consciousness and the necessity that is there to actually become enlightened or come out of this dark space of ignorance by taking shelter of the pure devotees. Any comments or questions?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. You were quoting from the purport, and you quoted the whole verse that Prabhupada partially quoted from the Bhagavatam 7.5.31, where Prahlad Maharaj essentially says that we're all bound by the ropes of illusions, something to that effect, which are made of very strong cords. And as soon as I heard that, something came to mind is that there's pretty much two reasons that we see in the scriptures why people come together. They're either bound by love or they're bound by hate. In the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni says there's two types of people we can't stop thinking of: those we love and those we hate. Which I appreciated, because in one sense, one point I was meditating on recently that kind of related to this point is that we see that there's two types of people, or you could say speakers, those who are motivational and those who are confrontational. Motivational people want to give others peace of mind because they're bound by love. Confrontational speakers want to give others a piece of their mind because they're bound by hate. That phrase, a piece of our mind, I got from Chaitanya Charan Prabhu. Somebody told me he said that, which I really appreciate it, because it makes a lot of sense. Also, in those series of verses from Rishabhadev, you were quoting one particular part that says, those who associate with those who are attached to women and materialistic people are fallen, something to that effect. And Prabhupada will always quote that verse, Asat Sangha Tiyaga E Vaishnava Achar Sri Sangi Eka Sadhu Krishna Abhakta Ar. Those who are wise disassociate with those who are attached to women or materialistic people because their Christian consciousness will be destroyed. However, we see that although it may be easy to physically separate ourselves from people we think are bad association or are bad associations, it's not so easy to mentally separate ourselves from bad association. So what is the use? Just like Hiranyakashipu, as soon as he asked Prahlad, what is the best thing you learned in school? He said to glorify Vishnu. And as soon as he said glorify Vishnu, his enemy, he was just as unhappy thinking about Vishnu as much as he would be if Vishnu was in his presence. So we see in our devotional life, what is the use of physically separating ourselves from so-called bad association if we can't mentally separate ourselves? So that's one point I keep in mind. Maybe I'll ask a question in that regard. But one last point was, maybe you could explain. So we see that sometimes when devotees come to, when they're bound by, let's say, maybe not hate, especially in devotee relationships, it may not be hate, but it may be a lot of animosity and disagreement. And so sometimes devotees want to call you into meetings. And we see that what's the foundation of the meeting? I disagree with you, you disagree with me, and we're constantly wasting each other's time. And one thing I keep in mind is that if we're forced to come together by the modes of material nature, bound by animosity, bound by disagreements, and if we're maintaining our position of we'll agree to disagree, then why not speak about Krishna? Because we may say, I'll never listen to you because you're not a pure devotee, you can't purify me. Well, we certainly don't get purified by cursing each other out or yelling at each other, so why not speak about Krishna? So my question is that, you know, if we're going to agree to disagree, we certainly don't get purified by, you know, coming. So why not, how can we transform our mentality by, okay, we agree to disagree. Now, you may say, I'm not going to get purified by hearing me, but we certainly get purified by cursing each other out or disagreeing or arguing. So what are some steps we can move forward to come together and be bounded by love and motivate each other, be motivational speakers and not confrontational speakers?
Yesterday class by His Holiness Niranjana Maharaj touched on that. The whole importance for devotees to actually come, we're meant to come to the position of Madhyama. In the position of Madhyama, there's a natural understanding of how to associate. And the association is done with it actually comes with a very, is based in a solid connection with Krishna. So because in the Madhyama position, the faith that we have, the Shraddha, has become now steady. The term is nishta. So our devotional service now is in solid ground, so steady. Nishtata bhakti. So a steady devotional service. Then when our devotional service, when our focus is grounded, then we have the capacity to properly associate, and with that sort of base, you know, that is in relationship to Krishna, and then we can actually have loving relationships. When our faith is not steady, meaning that we are in the neophyte stage of life, so our faith is, or our devotional service is called anishtata bhakti. So unsteady devotional service, meaning that we go into this upside down. We're sort of in a toggle war with our material propensities or our conditioning, we still being forced to sometimes act in certain ways. So we may be overcome at times by false ego, by anger, by distress, etc., etc. So that's an unsteady position. In an unsteady position, then it's very difficult to discriminate. It's very difficult to relate properly. So what do? Well, there is a very careful cultivation of the principles of devotional service. So that's we've been there. There is plenty of instructions of what to follow, what to do, and how to do it, what to cultivate. So one have to be very watchful, especially understanding that I'm still in this unsteady devotion. I'm still being afflicted by my condition. I can understand that if I don't have to look too carefully. If I just look, I can understand that I'm still afflicted by my material conditions. I still feel attractions and aversions to things. And so then I have to be extra careful. I have to be much watchful, you know. So if I'm not, say for example, like right now in my country, Venezuela, it's so heavily out of control, and the violence, because people are suffering, you know, danger and violence has increased because people are desperate. So they kill you for just taking your shoes. So people understand that. So, you know, you at certain time of the day, you just don't risk yourself to just walk in the streets. You know, so when dark comes, people just stay in their homes. So you don't go to certain places. You start to adjust yourself because you understand there's danger. So you adjust your life. But if I am, you know, like, I don't know, Batman or something, some powerful living entity, you know, that is so powerful that, you know, any crazy thief comes and this person just crushes him, you know, with his physical powers, that he can be not afraid. You can actually walk into, you know, that space, and because you are very sure of your capacity to defend yourself, you have no problem to go into those dangerous spaces. But if I am not in that position, if I'm still, you know, like, scared, I better make the arrangements not to go in there, you know, because you're going to be victimized. So we have to be scared. And we have to be aware that the influence of material nature. That's sort of what I try to express in this presentation, this class, the discussion. Sukadev Goswami was afraid of it, the influence, and that's Sukadev Goswami, what to speak of leader me, you know. So we have to go through with a lot of cautious and care, and make sure that when we go there, we follow the rules that have been given by the acharyas. Otherwise, we're going to be victimized. I just end with this. Living in New York in the 80s, it was a Wild West. It was famous for being sort of like wild, you know. Tourists will come and they're for sure will get, you know, mugged. And then you can actually, when you live in New York, there's certain rules of engagement that you start to learn. And that's how New Yorkers are. So during that time, part of the rules of engagement is that you don't connect with anyone in any form. So New York was famous for people being very disconnected. There was no friendliness. Everybody was minding their business. So you don't look people in the eye, you don't connect in any way. And that was part of the, you know, part of the rules. So then, you know, suppose you go in the street and every corner you're gonna find some real weird person, like extremely weird person at any corner. You make sure you don't connect with the weird, you don't even, you ignore it. Like, you know, is a grandma and a weird person, you don't make distinctions. It's the same people and you just don't mind your business. And then you can survive like that. You know, you're part of the environment. Now, a tourist, you can spot immediately because they will go like, you know, because, I mean, you see some weird people. I mean, it was like incredibly weird characters in New York. I mean, one after the other. People get, you know, all of a sudden someone jumps at you, you know. And, you know, for a regular New Yorker, it's like, you know, you just keep, you don't budge. You don't connect. You don't, you know, you just sort of like block that out. And then you're safe. If you show some sort of like, you finish, they know. They just smell you. So I have, you know, we have friends, people that come to visit and things like that. They all get mugged during that time. But then the people who live there, they just live there. So, of course, it's not, you know, for sure, you know, I mean, there's some crazy things. I mean, there's some stories. Even people who come to the temple, there was one guy who came to the temple all the time. Crazy guy. He was a regular burnout hippie guy. You know, I was a temple commander at one point, and then I have to kick out this guy, you know, all of a sudden I see this, the crazy, you know, thumping and squaring guy, you know, in the ashram, just hanging out. I say, man, you can't be here. You know, just get out. And then, you know, he out. So, well, he will come on Sundays, take one of those regular weird guys. One good day, we look in the newspaper, in the front page of the newspaper, there's a crazy guy, filled picture there, with the headlines, "The Monster of Thumping Square." The guy has killed a woman, cook the woman, make soup of the woman, and distribute the soup to the homeless people. That's the type of people who were there. It's like it was, you know, a regular guy that we have with, you know, we're kicking out and say, come on, making jokes of the guy and things like that. All of a sudden that's, it's crazy. It's dangerous. So we have to, the message is we have to play with the rules. There's rules of engagement to actually be safe in an environment that is very dangerous. So the rules of engagements are given in the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Prabhupada's, you know, instructions. Those are the rules of play of the game. And if we do that, we're safe. If we don't, you know, they're going to spot you from the distance, and they're going to, you know, mock you and victimize you, eat you, cook you, you know, distribute your soup to the, you know, other living entities. Yes, Jitendra Prabhu.
Yeah, I remember you telling that story about the cannibal.
Yeah.
But it seems like it'd be very difficult to do Sankirtan in New York, you know, because there's no innocence there, you know. I mean, maybe there was in the 60s and stuff, you know.
Well, you'd be surprised, you know, that that's somehow or other, it's such a strange place that it also is possibly the most favorable place to do Harinam in the whole Western world, at least here in America. The Harinam there is like ecstasy. I mean, you have free, you know, no one bothers you. You know, and then people who comes in touch with the holy name, they become transformed. You know, so book distribution is tough. It is tough. It was tough. Just to plain book distribution. Remember standing in the middle of Penn Station with rivers of people just walking, and then, you know, that basically you're not there. They can tramped you, you know, then, so it was rough.
So maybe doing Sankirtan, like sometimes devotees would go to the airport in their dhotis and then sometimes in karmi clothes, and they told that to Prabhupada, and he says, well, if you feel uncomfortable wearing karmi clothes, you can wear a dhoti or something, you know. It was kind of a funny thing the way he said it, you know, but I don't know if you remember that, but, you know, like the modes of nature, you know, like Prabhupada, when he got off the boat, he said, these people are so covered over by passion and ignorance, how will they understand? And through all my experiences, I mean, you know, most of the people I meet are, they're so far gone, you know, it's just like, you know, they're almost, you know, unapproachable, you know, in a lot of ways. So. And then I heard this one thing, I don't know if Prabhupada said it, but he says, if you knew what the person was thinking that's walking towards you down the street, you'd be walking on the other side.
Hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard that one. Did you ever hear that one?
No, I didn't hear that one. But the,
yeah.
Buyer this is perfectly understandable.
Buyer beware.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Garantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.